Division. It seems to be everywhere, especially in these mere months before the presidential election. The news of late has been full of division, it seems, over Trump and Hillary, over Black Lives Matter and Blue Lives Matter, even now a White Lives Matter group, plus the talk about ISIS, immigration, white supremacy, riots and protests, building a wall. The division has not only been evident in the rhetoric, as you know, but also in real violence. So much violence this summer. As we were still reeling from the shootings in Orlando, a cascade of more bad news kept hitting. Terrorist attacks across the globe. The deaths of Philando Castile and Alton Sterling. The deaths of police in Dallas and other cities. The names kept adding one to another. And it felt like my heart kept breaking and breaking. And yet, I kept returning to those words of Clarissa Pinkola Estes. My friends, do not lose heart. We were made for these times. Yes, even these times where our very democracy feels broken by division. Even these times where you probably don't bring up politics unless you're ready for name calling. Even these times where one candidate's supporters listen to the other candidate's supporters and cannot fathom how they can vote for them. My friends, do not lose heart. We were made for these times. Because deep in our spiritual DNA is the commitment to we the people, to a government of the people, by the people, for the people. The U.S. took a grand experiment in becoming a democracy. And talk to me later if you think we're instead a republic. I think it's both and. In the 1800s, the French intellectual Alexis de Tocqueville visited the U.S. and wrote a famous book called Democracy in America. In his country of France, the upper class held all the cards, and the law, get this, prohibited any assembly of 20 people without special permission. So as you might imagine, he was struck by America. He said, "No sooner do you set foot on American soil than you find yourself in a sort of tumult. A confused clamor rises up on all sides, and 1,000 voices reach your ears, each expressing some social need. Everything is in motion around you. The people of one district have come together to decide whether to build a church. In another, they're working to elect a representative. Farther off, delegates from the countryside are hurrying into town to advise on certain local improvement. In another village, the farmers have left their fields to debate plans for a road or a school. Some citizens assemble for the sole purpose of declaring their disapproval of the government's policies, while others proclaim that the men holding office are fathers of their country." This description by Tocqueville reminds us that democracy is not just about those people we elect in Washington, D.C. It's about us. Too often we escape our responsibilities as citizens in a democracy by focusing our disappointments or our hopes solely on our elected officials. As the Quaker writer Parker Palmer says, "If American democracy fails, the ultimate cause will not be a foreign invasion or the power of big money even, or the greed and dishonesty of some elected officials, or a military coup, or the internal communist, socialist, fascist takeover that keeps some Americans awake at night. It will happen because we, you and I, became so fearful of each other, of our differences and the future, that we unraveled the civic community on which democracy depends, losing our power to call it back to its highest form." So see, it's tempting to blame our troubles on all of these other forces, Because the truth is, the work of democracy is difficult. As Tocqueville said, it's a confused clamor. And Molly Ivins claimed, "The thing about democracy, beloveds, is that it is not neat, orderly, or quiet. It requires a certain relish for confusion." And yet, this same tumultuous democratic process has brought us great social progress, often slow, often halting, sometimes one step forward and two steps back, but sure progress. Think of it. Could the founding fathers of our country have imagined that women would one day vote and lead and even perhaps be president? And could they have imagined, as Michelle Obama has recently reminded us, that the house that slaves built would one day be filled by an African-American first family? We the people is in our DNA as a country. It's also in our spiritual DNA as Unitarian Universalists. Our tradition came to be in America with a democratic form of governance called congregational polity that was bold and radical for its time, and still is. And our fifth principle includes a commitment to the use of the democratic process. So again, it's not merely about bringing our opinion to the polls, placing our vote, and then celebrating or bemoaning what our elected officials create. Thomas Merton said, "Our basic problem is not political. It is apolitical and human." Democracy begins with us, with the conversations we have within ourselves, among each other, with the way we choose to relate, the actions we take, the trust we have in our fellow citizens to join with us. Democracy begins in the heart. And by heart, I don't mean pure emotion. The Quaker author Parker Palmer explains, "Heart comes from the Latin core. So in its original meaning, it points to the core of the human self, that center place where all of our ways of knowing converge, intellectual, emotional, sensory, intuitive, imaginative, experiential, relational, among others. Core is also the Latin root from which we get the word courage. When all that we know of self and world comes together in that center place, we are more likely to find the courage to act on what we know. So, you see, we were made for these times. And yet, we must practice. This is why Tocqueville talked about democracy requiring certain habits of the heart. Parker Palmer picked up where Tocqueville left off, and in his book, Healing the Heart of Democracy, he recommends 5 habits of the heart for democracy. Today we'll talk about the first habit of the heart. The first is understanding we are all in this together. It sounds trite, but let's examine it. We are all in this together, not just with those like us, but also with those incredibly different from us. What affects one of us affects all of us. Abraham Lincoln encouraged this habit of the heart. Even though he could not prevent the Civil War, that war in which our only enemies were each other, he urged us to come to an understanding that we are all in this together. He held out a radical hope, evident in his inaugural address delivered just weeks before the brink of the Civil War. Hear his words now with ears for today. "We are not enemies, but friends. We must not be enemies. Though passion may have strained, it must not break our bonds of affection. The mystic cords of memory, stretching from every battlefield and patriot grave, to every living heart and hearthstone all over this broad land will yet swell the chorus of the Union, when again touched, as surely they will be, by the better angels of our nature. Cultivating these habits of heart can bring out the better angels of our nature that tell us we are not, in fact, enemies, that tells us about interdependence, which is our seventh principle of Unitarian Universalism. So again, part of our spiritual DNA. As we just spoke in our responsive reading, we are one after all, you and I, together we suffer, together exist, and forever will recreate each other. What does that mean? We often think of the interdependent web in terms of our relation to nature. Thankfully, it has become much easier for us to see how are we connected to all of nature in ecology. But sometimes it is harder to see how this principle of interdependence is also true even in only the human realm. We often quote Martin Luther King's words, "We are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality." But what does it mean? For me, I think about every good thing or bad thing that happens to each of us. Each was affected by a string of actions made or not made by others. A teacher that nurtured a child that became your mother. A bully that tormented a boy that became your boss. The cancer in your grandmother that was planted by decisions made by a committee of people who chose to pollute the land. The terrorist, fueled by pain from his murdered family. The vote you were able to cast because of the hunger strikes of protesters decades ago. The art class you took because some lawmakers decided arts were good for public education. Each of these causes and effects, windy paths though they may sometimes seem, has too before it and after it scores and scores of other causes and effects, ripples of action and inaction, love and hate and everything in between, creating what we know as our lives. We are not isolated islands. We are tied together and forever will recreate each other. I think we often choose to ignore this because it opens us up to suffering. We see that the world is vast. We see that there is much suffering, and we see that we are not in total control. And this storm of realizations can be a lot for our hearts to hold. It leads to one of the most basic human questions, a question that has been answered with both wars and treaties, with both dismay and with immense human creativity. The question, what shall we do with our suffering? Instead of numbing ourselves, or defending ourselves, or isolating ourselves, can we have the courage to let the cries of the world break our hearts? For a heart broken open has ceased to see division, is open to the oneness of all things. Imagine if you could sit down with a person with whom you vehemently disagree. For some of you, it may be a Trump supporter. For some, it may be a Black Lives Matter activist. Whoever it may be. And what if, just for one conversation, instead of each of you articulating your opinions, you could ask one another about your losses and your griefs, your fears and your doubts. And you could speak from the heart with one another. I don't pretend that from these conversations we would all magically come to a consensus on our opinions, or change each other's minds, and I certainly hope we wouldn't begin to merely tolerate one another. From difference comes the strength of democracy. But I imagine that opening our hearts to each other's suffering would create a connection. And from that connection, we could recommit ourselves to a process by which, even in the midst of our deep and real differences, we can create a world of peace. For whether we realize it or not, the truth is that we are stuck with each other. We are wound and bound together, creating the world we live in. May we cultivate habits of the heart that make it a good world. For we were made for these times. Blessed be you.